Welcome to Conversations on Public Health, a regular program from the Harvard School of Public Health that explores current issues in the field. Today we're speaking with Milton Weinstein, the Henry J. Kaiser Professor of Health Policy and Management. Weinstein is an expert on evaluating costs in healthcare in order to find out which interventions provide the best medical and economic value. Comparative effectiveness research, which is part of President Obama's 2010 healthcare reform bill, was the subject of a paper Weinstein co-authored in the New England Journal of Medicine earlier this year. What is comparative effectiveness?
Everybody knows that the cost of healthcare in the U.S. is a problem. We spend more than one out of every $6 on healthcare services, which is way more than any other country in the world. Healthcare reform that involves expanding access to health insurance will only add to the cost unless something is done to ensure that the money that we spend on healthcare is being spent wisely. That is, that it's giving us good value for the money. So comparative effectiveness is a new name for research that compares alternative ways of treating or diagnosing or preventing illness, comparing them in terms of health outcomes. It involves different types of surgical procedures, different diagnostic testing technologies, and also different preventive services such as screening, vaccination, and healthcare counseling. It could also consider comparative costs, although there is considerable debate as to whether costs should be part of comparative effectiveness research under healthcare reform. And I should add that we at the Harvard School of Public Health have been doing comparative effectiveness research under different names for over three decades.
Is there a difference between comparative effectiveness and cost effectiveness?
Yes, well, in some sense, cost-effectiveness is part of comparative effectiveness. Cost-effectiveness analysis, which was developed in large part here at the School of Public Health, is a method of measuring the relationship between the improvement in health outcome that one receives from a health service relative to the additional cost of that health service. In cost-effectiveness analysis, health improvement is usually measured in terms of something we call quality-adjusted life years. That is, years of life weighted by an index that reflects the patient's quality of life during those years. The result of a cost-effectiveness analysis is then expressed as a ratio. It's the ratio of the additional cost of one alternative compared to another, divided by the average number of additional quality-adjusted years of life gained. Cost-effectiveness ratios less than $100,000 per quality-adjusted life year are generally considered good value for money in the U.S. As I mentioned, there's a debate over whether cost-effectiveness research should be part of comparative effectiveness research under health reform. But in my view, it's really inevitable that it be included if we're going to contain costs.
In your NEJM article, you reviewed the evidence on the relationship between health outcomes and healthcare spending. What did you find?
Yes, well, that paper was a collaboration between myself and a health economist at Dartmouth named John Skinner, who has been working with a group of investigators who study geographic variations of both health outcomes and health spending. And from that research and others, there's now emerged a body of evidence that says that across geographic areas, the association between health outcomes and spending is very weak. Some studies even show a negative relationship. That is, areas that spend more on healthcare actually might get worse outcomes. And the example of McAllen, Texas versus El Paso, Texas, that was made famous by my colleague here at the school, Dr. Atul Gawande, in his New Yorker article, is one example of this. Now, does this mean that the high spending areas that get worse outcomes are necessarily wasting money on useless or even harmful health services? We say not necessarily. We found that these weak or negative associations between spending and outcomes may reflect instead the fact that the low-cost, good outcome areas use more cost-effective services, that is, services that improve outcomes a lot for a little bit of money, whereas other areas fail to use enough of those cost-effective services, but use a lot of expensive services instead that provide very little value for money. Not zero value, but a very high cost for a very little bit of health improvement. So if those high-cost areas were simply to cut back on their spending, they would end up with worse outcomes because they'd be giving up some health gains, even though those gains come at a very high cost. It's convenient for politicians to claim that they're doing a lot of useless things and could cut back without sacrificing health, but the evidence says not so fast.
In your paper, you ask the question, is it possible to contain health care costs without causing worse health outcomes? How did you answer that?
Well, the key is to improve the quality of care in the high-spending areas by substituting more cost-effective services for less cost-effective services. By taking money out of high-cost, low-value medicines, such as the extra MRI test or the extra intensive care intervention, taking that money and using it on high-value medical services, such as screening for colorectal cancer, or using appropriate medications after a heart attack, these high-cost areas can improve health and save money at the same time.
This seems to make a lot of sense given the high cost of health care in this country, yet there are many who criticize cost-effectiveness efforts, even using terms like death panels. What are their arguments, and how do you respond to them?
Well, my way of answering that is to point out that we're already rationing health care in this country. One out of six Americans doesn't have health insurance. Even people who do have health insurance have insurers that erect barriers so that patients won't use as much health care. Things like co-payments, deductibles, waiting time to schedule appointments, and a lot of paperwork. The problem is that the average consumer doesn't have the knowledge to distinguish high-value medicine from low-value medicine. So they ration their time and their money across the board without regard to what's really going to benefit them and what's going to benefit them only a little bit. One approach that seems to be gaining traction in this country is called value-based insurance design, which means in lay terms that things like co-payments and other barriers would be linked to value or cost-effectiveness. So patients who should get statin drugs after a heart attack would pay a low co-payment for those drugs, while patients who want a whole body scan for screening purposes would have to pay more for that scan out of pocket. Now, getting back to the death panels, the issue is that nobody sees the people in this country who die because their doctors don't prescribe effective health care, or the people who die because they don't have insurance at all. So the use of the term death panels to describe a world in which we are being thoughtful and rational about the way we ration health care is really missing the point.
This has been a Harvard School of Public Health production. Please visit us on the web at www.hsph.harvard.edu.